Check, check, check. Thank you for tuning in to the Dixon James podcast, number 590-fucking-9. I got my $2 special again. I don't need more than the small coffee, so, I mean, I'm not jipping myself. I could have paid a quarter extra and got a medium, but it comes with this fabulous Danish. I am just amazed at how well McDonald's has done this little $2 deal. So, I am not in my usual spot. It's snowing today, the roads are slippery, and this little Toyota that I'm driving, my wife's old car, I noticed rust on the side. That's not good. That really is going to hurt the resale value. Probably been in an accident. I think it was a rental at one point when we bought it. We paid too much for it. But anyway, serving me well now, except even with winter tires on, what's that noise? Maybe from outside? Even with winter tires on, it, oh, shut up. Jesus. I'm sorry. All right.
Oh.
Machinery and stuff. Crap going on. It's very, very slippy on the road. I would not take this on any long journeys. And I was going to podcast you at my escape place, my refuge, Bluffers Park. And I thought, man, that going down that hill will be fun. Coming back up that hill is going to be a little tricky. So instead, I turned into the passenger pickup, drop-off, kiss-and-ride stop at Kennedy Subway Station. This is a place where I've met many friends, Brent the Closet Geek, probably Adam Gratrix, I don't know why. But I've, you know, this is where you drop, put people on the subway or drop them off, whatever you have to do. Just off Eglinton, so close enough to my home. And I shouldn't be wasting any time at all. Especially this preamble part. My God, why even bother? I've just come from Staples. If you follow me on Twitter, you would have seen that I put up question. How is it going, your project, to get rid of all the crap you've got in your closets? Answer, I'm on my way to Staples to buy a marker and 5 more boxes. In fact, I got 6 boxes and 5 markers. I just can't get rid of stuff. So, there are random boxes of old files, you know, parts of Dixon Jane's that were put together. Copies, oh my God, it's probably Brian. Hang on, would you? Copies of the Canadian zine I did in Tokyo. Yeah, it is Brian. Hello, Brian. Hello, Brian.
Hello, Tim. Happy New Year.
Yes, Happy New Year to you, too.
You're not driving, are you?
Well, I'm parked at the Kennedy Go. I'm in the middle of recording a podcast, but that doesn't matter. They're never important. Are you in town? Okay, listen, I'm going to shut off this podcast, so hang on just a second.
Is it rolling, Bob?
Yeah, check, check, check. And welcome to Dixon Jane's 599, is that right? Oh my gosh, I hadn't realized that, but must be. It's minus 11. I am sitting in the road track in the driveway, and for whatever reason, I'm just not comfortable recording from inside my house. I mean, rarely do you ever get a recording. I've done a few down the basement. I could be down there now, nice and cozy, furnace running. But I fired up the engine. I want to keep this thing, you know, tuned and ready to go. I don't know what other reasons. I thought about it yesterday. I started a cleaning for sort of the long-term view of one day I will have to pare down my belongings, all the things I've kept all these years. So I decided, okay, I'm going to do one closet. Now, that closet had about 15 banker's boxes full of stuff. Some of them, quite a few of them were marked, you know, letters, from this person, from that person, and even Barnacle Bill has his own box of just his letters, and of course he kindly sent back a box of my letters to him. So there's an incredible record there. But what was special was opening a box for the first time of letters my mother had saved from my father just before they were married to the period right after their marriage. So 1938, 1939, all with the stamps, 3-cent stamps. I guess that would be George the Sixth, 38, 39. Queen didn't come, Queen. Yeah, George the Fifth? I don't know. You know, it's an easy question to find. Google it. Anyway, it's pretty neat. They're all in their envelopes, a lot of them on beautiful letterhead from his company, Marine Industries in Montreal. Now, my dad was a very private person, would not like me talking about this, so I'm not going to reveal the contents, but my goodness, did they love each other. And it's, I don't know if it's a rare thing. I was going to say it's a rare thing, but maybe there's a lot of devoted, happy couples out there with that same kind of lifelong love for each other. And it's a wonderful thing. And with those letters, there was another little diary my mother kept after my father died. I was in Japan when he died. I came back in 1993 and came back for the funeral. And she missed him so much, she kept a diary, and she'd write to him every night in just dear terms, and just telling him what she had done that day and let him know that she was still thinking about him and knew he was never out of her thoughts. It's kind of lovely. And, of course, it brought back some time. Oh, my God, that's when my mother was still able to come and visit us, you know, get on a bus or a train and or get driven to us and was able to spend time with my children when they were young. For which I'm very, very grateful. Of course, you know, the 20-year... I sort of factor in I'm about 20 years older than my average listener. And no, there ain't no parents around anymore. And I do miss them. But these letters were amazing. And then there was another box of all the letters that I had ever written to my parents that she saved. Now, when I wrote to my parents in 1969, 1970, when I was in Europe, my father typed them all out. So I have a record of every letter, every aerogram, every postcard, you know, dated and where it was from that I sent. And again, I'm seeing this because it's that celebration of a written record that exists, not just an email or a tweet here and there, but a you know, often a multi-page letter. And a great many of them were from in that box of my mother's, or ones I hadn't seen since I'd written them, from Nigeria, 1980 to 82, and from Japan, 1984 and on, especially the ones after I'd met my wife. So what a wealth. Like, there's these 10 years of, 11 years of podcast, there's 20 years of the Dixon Jane zine, but then there is a lifetime of letters from the time I was 21 years old that have just been saved and treasured, and letters, you know, others to me and that were saved. Of my father's letters, there were two written from Europe, 1946, January, right after the war, and just mentioning the devastation in London, and at one point he splurged. He was so fed up not having any chocolate, he loved his Laura Secord, that he splurged all his rations and got some chocolate and shared it with two little children in a Paris hotel. I thought that was a wonderful little passage, and then talked about the devastation, the cues for everything, lining up for absolutely everything, and wow. And this went on for a long time, you know. I mean, you talk about the war, and yeah, the Allies won, good for the British. But the price they paid was pretty damn heavy. And then he talks about the devastation walking down the streets of London, and it's still in ruins at that time. So another, you know, piece of history. I treasure, I value, and that's the kind of family. So when it comes to throwing things out, these don't get thrown out. These just have to be saved and stored. I don't know who in the future, whether either my sons would be interested or where this will go, but I just hate the thought of this history ever being lost. So that was interesting, but of course it's the kind of process that takes me forever to get through. You pick up one box and you start opening envelopes and reading letters, and they, oh my God, I'm never, so the room I'm trying to clean up is still an absolute shambles. It's just stuff all over the floor. There's crap to get rid of, you know, especially in the way of technology that's just out of date and useless. And even that's hard for me. What do you do with it, you know? Oh, my God. And there's a lot more to go through. And then just little, you know, boxes like all my old passports and the badges from my sons when they were beavers and cubs, you know, and just stuff that's been saved. The longer you save it, you know, the harder it is to get rid of it. And they, well, I'll just put that in a special box and let them decide. And then there are gifts from Japan I had received over the years, you know, the 22 years of doing this tour. Beautiful things, never been opened. And, well, man. So I've put those in a bag on good stuff for my son to take and let him decide, you know. Okay, hey, you decide if you want this stuff, if it ever becomes part of your home. I hope at least one of my sons is successful and has a decent home and a place to keep stuff. And this isn't even, I'm not even thinking about the bar, although one of the tricks I have is stuff that I'm not sure what to do about, sneaking it down into the bar. Okay, well, maybe there's a place here with all the other magazines or all the other stuff, you know. All right, I'll just put it there for now and deal with it later. So not a lot gets thrown out. A lot of paper gets recycled. I mean, the easiest part was getting rid of a lot of my teaching materials. But even then, I saved a full box in case I do go back to teaching in the fall at Centennial. You know, now looking at our finances, I'm thinking, geez, I might have to do that. So, man, oh man, who knows? So all this business of, oh, my trip to Yellowknife in the future, my trip to Florida, supposedly this coming week, I don't know. I don't even know if I want to. Part of me does, but part of me is not ready. There's just too much else. And everything I do, I mean, everything anybody should do, there has to be a right time. There has to be a right feeling. And I'm a little worried about, of course, some of the horrific weather that they're happening down south. And I don't want to be driving through, you know, monster storms and accidents on the major highways. Of course, I want to get off the major highways, but not if they're not plowed. So what I'm thinking is drive to Ottawa first. I haven't seen my family, my brother, my sister, nephews, nieces and stuff for a long time. I think that's what I want to do first. Then my dear cousin, referred to as Cousin Zeke, out in the country outside Ottawa, near Russell. I'd like to visit him. So I'm thinking maybe head to Ottawa, where it's colder than here, and more snow, but not that far from the American border if you just head straight south. So go there, see how I feel, and then if the urge takes me, get on the highway and head south, and if it doesn't, well, then just head on back to Scarborough. So there you go. I've got to go back in. I do have to finish cleaning up. My wife is working today. I just want to lie down with my pussycat and nap, which is not a bad thing to do on a cold winter day. Of course, she loves it too. But I should, you know, make an attempt to at least put things back in the boxes and label all the boxes. I've got to combine. I have one little box I've had since the 1960s called, it just labeled junk. And then inside there was a RDC Racing Drivers Club I joined when I was still a teenager. British Petroleum, BPRDC, British Petroleum Racing Drivers Club. It's kind of a fan club for car races at Mossport and other things. And I've got stickers, and I used to put stuff in there that I wanted to keep that was clearly junk even then. But the fact that I still have it. So I've got to consolidate and just have one big banker's box just labeled junk. Maybe, you know, there's a slide rule there, my brother's. Well, I've never used a slide rule. I was thinking about that today. In Quebec, when I was going, we graduated in grade 11, you can go into university. But if you went to grade 12 in those days, it was equivalent to Ontario's grade 13, which they used to have.
That would get you into second-year university if you passed grade 12. So a lot of people did that to save a year's tuition cost. I lasted one class, walked into a science class I had to take, or a math class, I guess. Guy said, get out your slide rules. And I thought, slide rule? I don't think so. And dropped that course. I did have an English course, and the guy used to come into class wearing a black cape. He had long red hair and a black cape. This was 1966. So, crazy times, especially for young English teachers at a high school. He was kind of cool, and I think I liked that, but that was the first adult decision I made. I've mentioned this before, that I came home and told my parents after 3 months, I'm quitting. I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm not going to get through. I haven't even made up all the credits. This isn't for me. I'm quitting. And I was commuting into Montreal. I had a couple of friends. Somebody else had just read the book Candy and was all excited about Candy and knew to recite the line of the story. What was it? Fuck, cunt, piss, shit. Shit, talk. Fuck, cunt, piss, shit. Twit, cock, whore, or something like that. There was a famous line, and he used to recite this in class all the time. I don't know why I became friends with him, but it was a bit of a crazy time. I had to go to summer school, too. Geez, Montreal West for summer school to pick up, you know, French, written French courses or something, or math. I wasn't a good student. And you know what's funny? Just today I was on somewhere, I don't know, Facebook or Twitter or whatever, and it was a list of 20... unknown great Canadian universities. It said there's 100 universities in Canada. I can't believe that, but apparently there is. And, I know, they challenge people to even name 20 of them. I thought, yeah, well, I'd be hard-pressed to name 20 universities here. But if I had my way, and who's to say I won't have my way, I would get in this road trick and I'd drive off to university and just audit some courses. I could see spending a good part of my future heading off and saying, hey, I want to take a course on, you know, Canadian history or something here on, you know, some sociology course, some psychology course, and pick them up as an adult student. I love going back. And here's me talking about how bad I was, how poorly I performed in school. Well, I do know that I just don't have a brain that works like other people's brains. And I'm not ashamed of that. It's just the way I've told you, and I'll repeat it here because it keeps coming back to me. The story of after graduation from high school, my friends got hired by the Bell Telephone Company, and all you had to do was go in downtown Toronto or Montreal and do this simple, very simple test with pictures and you know, pulleys and triangles and things and, you know, circle your answer. Okay, you pull this rope, what's going to happen here? And I failed, and I remember the friends laughing. How could you fail that? The dumbest kid in the class passed that. And got hired by Bell. And you couldn't pass that? I just don't work that way. I mean, it took me forever to figure out how to put my credit card into a slot at a gas fill-up. It's not stupidity. It's a brain that works different ways. And again, I look at these courses I took while I was at Centennial. I look back now and I'm like, what a waste. Why did I take that adult education? Well, I had fun while I was doing it. The doing. And I, you know, got A on everything. I loved it. I'm great at writing papers and doing that kind of thing. And then I took this second certificate in counseling, the four courses. A on everything. A plus. I'm good and I'm reading back and I can write an essay. I can write. I have English skills. It's just there's some other parts of my brain that malfunction, you know. The chip needs replacements. I got a defective chip, all right? That's how it started. But, anyway, I do these podcasts, and I enjoy them. And again, it's funny, I remember good friend Tim Coyne pointing out to me, you know, I love your podcast, I think it's great, but if I gave it to 10 of my friends, 9.5 of them wouldn't like it, you know. Maybe one half, maybe one person. It wasn't even a whole person. Less than one person would actually bother to listen to the Dixon James podcast. And he didn't mean that in a nasty way. He's just, hey, it's a matter of fact, you know. And I'm reading about all these people, podcasts I listen to. Everybody wants to listen to these fucking serial stories and crime stories and these. They need to be entertained. Nobody wants to listen to some old man going on about his life and his history, and yet that is. I sat beside a woman in church today, and she said, I was a jet setter when I was 16, flying between New York and Toronto. And I don't think she wasn't jet setter. In fact, that wasn't the word, but I was traveling, but it was on TCA, which some of you will know was Trans-Canada Airlines, because her parents got divorced. One lived in New York, one in Toronto. A wonderful old woman I really like sitting beside, who's got, and she talked about our personal histories and why she and I both like sitting in the back together. They moved the rocking chairs up to the middle, and I got really annoyed. This is, hey, you can't do that. And there was one rocking chair left beside her, and I sat down. There are so many well-educated... I know this is a different topic. Somehow it all ties in, because we were talking about our life histories, and there were so many people there who are very bright and very well-educated and great to speak to. And anything can come up at that church. Here's the beautiful thing. The chair of the board said, we got a meeting Tuesday night. Everybody's welcome. And the proposal we're putting forth, there's one more refugee family, a husband, wife, and two children, that need sponsorship because he is on the kill list. And these are people, I believe it's Bangladesh, who have dared to challenge the status quo. And they have international, United Nations refugee status, but they don't have a place yet. They've not been accepted in Canada. And his proposal is that we, as a church, as a group, sponsor them and get them safely set up in Canada. And I think, wow, here's a church, a group, an organization that's actually acting on its commitments and on its beliefs. And those are the kind of people that go here. So I'm not going to go on. We taught Greta's, the theme today was grit, how it is one of the qualities that some people have, but a lot of people have lost. She went on to DNA and evolution, everything else, but this quality, this personal quality of grit is what makes people successful. And it's being able to, I guess, get back on your feet. I wrote a note down here. What did I write? Grit, a successful character trait. It's for people who can handle failure and who have the belief that intelligence can be changed. So maybe this relates back to what I was talking about, my own failure in certain areas. That people with grit believe that intelligence isn't a fixed thing. You know, and some people, of course, you're born with certain qualities, and you know, nobody's going to argue that. And some people are just good at this and this and this. But those people with grit believe that they can better their lives. And there are a lot of others who lack grit and just sort of accept whatever status they find themselves in, whatever position, and sort of almost give up on, like, resign themselves, I guess. People with grit don't resign themselves to certain fixed, predictable outcomes. They do something about it. I think I've got grit. So there you go. Again, it's 20 minutes, and you think, oh my God, dude, like, you're all over the fucking place. But I think it all relates. Personal histories. This is a personal narrative. Those letters are part of a personal narrative. I'm glad there's a whole written history. I just wish there was some way of putting it all together in that book. Like, if I could devote myself. And I did see there was a course on how to write a biography, a course that you can get a degree in or a certificate, whatever, on writing a story, of teaching you. And I think I've got so many rich resources of my history, of times and dates and places and people that I could call back on, that I could pull from. You could even incorporate parts of letters into this story. But will I ever get around to doing it? And how does the road trek play into this? And how does paring things down and maybe one day having to sell this house, what role is that going to play? And these journeys up ahead, what meaning do they have? And is it important if I go to Florida or not? And how important is having Monkey right here in my hand sitting beside me for this trip? Maybe in place of Yuki. I guess Monkey. Yes, Monkey, you're coming with me. All right, boys, girls, thanks for listening. As always, this is yours truly, the host, the one and only, Scarborough Dude. signing off from the road trip.
Tell me that you want me, and I can think about betrayal. You can leave me thinking, drinking all night, 'cause that's the sharpest nail. Shot of Chairman Bound, and I can tell you all my problems. Yeah, you can try and hold them down. This seems a trivial pursuit now, but it's the only game in town.
Check. I'm back. I don't know what you heard before. I know I did a long clip in the road track, but here I am now, a fresh clip just for you, parked outside Hakeem's Optical. I was here 3 years ago. My glasses broke. I mean, I had one frame broke off, and I did a beautiful job of taking needle-nose pliers and opening up a paper clip and winding it around because there's no threads for the screw anymore. And boy, that held up for 2-3 weeks, and then the other side just snapped off. And thought, okay, can't get the message. Time to replace your glasses. Prescription is the same as last time. Because I had them tested in January, or September. Well, don't pay for a new pair. Just get the frames. And sure enough, I went to Hakeem. Very close by, right here on Lawrence Avenue. Almost a straight line north from my house. And guy said, oh, well, we'll look around. What we can do is just find another frame that fits, and we'll just cut them a little bit to fit the new frame, which wasn't an option I was expecting. I was going to have to pay a lot of money for new lenses, and why bother? Anyway, a great old guy. It was a wonderful experience, and I realized it's an old man with white hair in a place that generally has, younger people. And I realized partway through our conversation, as did he, that we had met before. And we had a very nice conversation the last time. And it's what makes buying sometimes such a nice experience, when you actually have a pleasant person-to-person exchange. They're doing their job. He was professional. He was great. He went through the shop. He found three frames. And these were the cheapest frames. And, I'm sure my wife wouldn't approve. I just said, yeah, they fit. Okay, sure. Yeah, we'll have them ready tonight, if not tomorrow by noon. Wow, this is amazing service. So number one, it's a chore taken off the list. I was lying down with Pussycat, carried her up to my bed, lay her down, and then just sort of lay down with her. And, oh, God, that's so nice. And I could have napped all day just lying there. But the brain starts going, and you dog, you lazy dog, you got shit to do, man. Your floor, you can't walk in your room. It's covered with all the stuff you tore out of your cupboards, and you haven't put back. You haven't organized. So guilt got me up, and then I said, hey, before you start putting stuff and labeling boxes and in the six new banker boxes you just bought, because you're not throwing anything out, you're just repackaging, go get your glasses done. So that's done. I feel great. Success. Bam. Big one off the list. I had to do this before I headed south. Thank God it didn't happen when I was halfway to Florida in a snowstorm. God, would have been awful. But, I think ahead about these things. Bring a backup pair. Bring a spare pair. That's what I'm wearing now. Anyway, day-to-day living. What else? Yeah, so I've come up with a system. I'm going to put stuff in boxes, and I'm going to label them. Like, I've got maybe at least two boxes, Dixon Jane's, past issues and stuff. I've got 6-7 boxes of letters. One box, just letters from Barnacle Bill. Did I say it? No, I didn't say that. Maybe I said that. Yeah, I did. Maybe I've told you all this shit. Sorry. Anyway, what I'm going to do is on some boxes, I'm going to put an X. And the X means if I don't come home, if I'm dead, if something happens to me, I get a stroke, I can't talk anymore. Anything with an X, you can toss it. You can look through it first, but you can toss it out. Anything with a check mark means keep it. Hey, that's where I put the valuable, Cape Canaveral, first day of issue, John Glenn envelopes and, coin sets and stuff. Hey, don't throw out anything in this box. And letters, I want the letters saved, So there'll be checks and X's and things will get done. And I guess that's what I've got to go back home now and get started on this minute. Brian is back in town. You heard, I don't know. And we got to go out for a beer. I got a church men's group meeting tonight to talk about who knows what. Sometimes what? Sometimes life seems complicated. I read Deb Ozarko. She does a blog, a podcast, and it was like, boom, we're done, finished. End of mankind. I've given up. I'm not even going to try anymore. She's already reached her state of at oneness with the animals and plants and life around her, but she's given up on mankind. Bam. Permanent. We're done. We are not going to get better. We've just got a very short time left, and Gaia, karma is coming back to wipe out mankind. That was kind of depressing. The thing is, I didn't think she was wrong. She was really bummed out by the statistics of the animals that become extinct or wiped out or just decimated every day, every year, you know, and just, and it's tied in with this book that I'm reading too on Sapiens, of just the horridness of the human race. Why do I read this stuff? But I mean, you want to be real. And so you read the stuff that you think is a reflection of reality. Meryl Streep last night on the Globe Awards, Golden Globes, whatever. I watched that whole thing. I always do. I'm a sucker for Academy Awards, the Globes. And, you know, I like to see some of the Hollywood showbiz people and find out what movies are getting great reviews and so on. I don't care about La La Land. But I really did like Meryl Streep's talk. Like, bam, sock it to him. Somebody stands up to fucking Donald Trump. And the trouble is, I've sort of almost resigned myself to Trump. Hey, you know, as Bob Goyette used to say, not my monkeys, not my circus. And that holds, you know, hey, this is America's problem. But of course, you know, there's a big spillover. And also it's a reflection of what's going on in the world, like, you know, with all these crazy politicians all over the world coming into power. And it's a time of fear and anxiety and hatred and, ignorance. And I was kind of ready to let it go, you know, hey, I'm not going to worry about this. But Meryl Streep got me all wound up again. And it's true. I mean, a man of this crassness is going to be the president of the United States of America? Holy fuck! What a reflection of the times. My God. So, all right, I'm not going to go on. I got to go home. I got to do the rest of that shit. This is a short clip to say, hey, I had one great thing that happened. Number two is 4 o'clock. I'm putting a roast beef in the oven. My wife's instructions, you know, so I don't know. Things are up and down in my household. I cannot understand. I cannot keep track of how things work and when I'm doing something right and when I'm doing something wrong. And, save that for another time, another story. Scabberdee! Signing off. Listen to the code. Gone cold, but
My heart's gone colder. I think I'm reading too much. It feels like 24 and it's a kick in the nuts. When your vision clears up and you realize you've only been playing with change. Yeah, you realize you've only been playing with change. Yeah, you realize you've only been playing with change. Yeah, there's people more together than you'll ever be. Yeah, there's people more together than you'll ever be. Yeah, there's people more together than I'll ever be. And it makes you want to ask yourself, what's happening to me? What's happening to me? Yeah, it makes you wanna ask yourself, what's happening?
Check. Hang on, I'll put this in the visor. It might be a little bit of sound. There we go. We're good. Scarborough Dude here. Who else? The Dixon James Podcast in Bluffers Park on a overcast Thursday. But my God, all the snow's melted. There's none on my road trek, which is great. We really do have it easy. As far as Canadian weather goes, Toronto's one of the easiest places to live. Anyway, I got my McDonald's coffee, and I was just about to bite into my blueberry Danish, and thought, no, bring that home and give it to your number two son, because I know where I was 25 years ago today, and I was back in our home in Kawasaki, seeing my wife out the door, very pregnant, and ready to have that baby. And fortunately, our next-door neighbors, very kind, the Hirose family. We lived four little houses attached together. What do you call those? Duplex, whatever. Except there were four. Wonderful neighbors, wonderful little community, beautiful little park. Brand-new homes across from a little farm where the man grew special grapes and things. And you can still find that in Japan, in modern Japan, because of the tax system. If you have a farm, you're hardly paying any taxes on the land if it's still in your family, and a temple nearby. Anyway, the neighbors kindly took my wife down to the station where we were. What was the station? It was on the Odakyu line, Kitami, I guess. And had my number two son born, and I had to stay back with number one son, so I wasn't able to be there for the birth this time, but... all went well, happened very quickly, and here we are 25 years later. And unfortunately, he's got a bit of a cold today, so we may have had to change our supper plans and not go out for delicious Japanese food, but we'll do something. Anyway, all of which is to say hello. I was at the only cafe last night. And had a wonderful time catching up with Brian. I hadn't seen Brian since last year. He had gone up and spent Christmas and New Year's up in Nunavut with two of his sons anyway, and then back to Ottawa with another son. And it was a good evening to catch up, but it was more than that. We reached our limit, 4.5 pints. You know, we were at 3 ready to stop and then said, hey, that's ridiculous, it's early, because we started at 4:30. Thought the place would be empty, and no, it was busy, but we managed to snag the dining table at the very front, the best seat in the house, and I was told last night, I got outside, okay, back it up, 3 pints, all right, have one more, and then we're in a good conversation with two other guys at the other end of the table, and figured, all right, let's share a final pint, and we did, it was very good. But meanwhile, I had stepped out and had my little whoop-de-doo in an alleyway. Or not an alleyway, in a doorway. Hey, come on, I'm not hiding anything here. And then came back and Fabian was outside. Now, Fabian is the manager, the guy who steers the only cafe. The guy has brought in all the changes and just keeps that place going and knows its history. And he's a great guy. He only, you know, he works the day shift, so I don't often see him unless he drops by at night. And we just had a wonderful, just a good talk. It was one of those where we were primed, and we're looking back in. All this is going to tie together, so be patient, all right? We're looking back in at Brian, who is sitting at the table reading letters from 1995 right through to 2003. Couple of years missing there, that his wife had written, the annual Christmas letter that I had passed on to him. So he's reliving his life. He's sitting there. We're outside having a talk about breaking free and, you know, regaining your youth and the periods of stagnation that may happen in your life. I had talked about just getting my road track and was ready to get on the road soon. He was cheering me on. He knows me as Ken and as a Scarborough dude. And you know, all in support, and it was, you know, how do you repeat a conversation unless you've recorded it? It was just a good talk. It brought us closer, which was nice because I tell him I'm one of your biggest supporters here, but he pointed out the spot where Brian was sitting. He said, you know, the Lowest of the Low, which is a Toronto band, kind of an indie band from way back. He said. He named the album. I haven't Googled it. I don't know. I couldn't tell you right now what the album was. I suppose I should have done research and told you, but you can Google it yourself. The Lowest of the Low wrote one of their hit albums sitting at that very table that Brian and I were sitting at. Lowest of the Low. It was a two-word. Not Lowest of the Lie. Lowest of the Low. An album that, not Lowe's Home Improvement. Here's the official site of the Lowest of the Low Grey Cup series. Oh, come on now. Anyway, whatever album there was. Lee's Palace. Come on. We just, you know, I know you could have done this a lot faster. Older post. I just want a list of all your albums, guys. Come on, that should have been easier than this. Those are low. All right, Wikipedia. That'll do it. Anyway, I just thought that was neat. Alternative rock, years active, 91 to 94, 2000, 2007, 2010 to present. So they've come and they've gone. Associated Acts members, Ron Hawkins. Is that the Ronnie Hawkins? Yeah. Los Angeles Canadian alternative rock band formed in 1991 from Toronto, Canada. They were one of the most influential bands in the Canadian alternative music scene in the early 90s, garnering widespread critical acclaim and radio play. Oh, yes. Their most successful album, Shakespeare My Butt, was named one of the 10 great albums in Canadian music. Now, I'm going to have to get that, and I'm probably going to have to play it for you, as well as being 84th in the greatest Canadian albums of all time, the discography. So I'm pretty sure... That was the album he was talking about. And he said that was written in the Only Cafe at that very table. So there you go. A little bit of history. I felt proud to be associated. That's when I piped up. Yeah, well, I'm famous too. I didn't say that, but I'd like to think I was. it was a great evening. I'm so happy. Now I have this new system. I don't drive anymore. Remember that. I take the number 9 Bellamy bus to Warden Station, get on the train that's only about 6 stops, get off at Donlands, bam, you're right there. So to have a bar that close, but not just a bar that close, my favorite bar in Toronto, one of my, you know, top 10 ever bars in the world, guaranteed it's in the top 10, maybe even the top 5. Takemi's would be number 1. But anyway, I'm getting sidetracked here. Why was Brian reading those letters? Because I had gone through a box marked, I found one file folder in one of those 15 boxes sitting in my room, marked Christmas letters, and there was one friend who I'm not friends with anymore. I just threw them out. I'm not even going to read those, which was stupid. I shouldn't have done that. I should have kept them. What an idiot! Now I regret it. Brian's I was ready to throw out. No, you can't do that. Phone him. So I phoned him right away. And he said, no, keep them. And thank God I did, because this is this purge I'm going through of trying to get rid of stuff and deciding what I should and what I shouldn't. Now, last night I had a revelation, which is why I'm going on. Be fucking patient, all right? If you're squirming now or fast-forwarding, fuck you. I'm trying to tell a story here, all right? Be patient. Up until now, this has been a chore. Something I don't want to do, but I have to do. Last night, I realized that's not it at all. There's a process going on. I am living in the moment. This is important. The going through, the finding Brian's letters, to take them to the bar and hand them over to Brian so that he could relive part of his life from 20 years ago that's been forgotten, with the details of who went where and when and how of his marriage back then. This is amazing. So my doing that touched him and sent ripples through. He's going to copy those and send them to his sons. This is wonderful. But the whole process as well, I've got one whole folder. I have to think, how do I file this stuff if I'm putting it in? Number one, the system. A big X means once I'm gone, my children are free to send it out. Throw it out. You don't even have to look through it, but you can if you want, but you don't have to. If it's got a check mark, keep it, go through it. Okay, that's a simple system. Then I've got to start building. Right now I've got about 15 piles on the floor. I've got to organize those somehow. So these are, okay, these are lesson plans. This is my study tours in the past, the whole history of the 22 years of my study tours. But here are some correspondence in the early days of my first company, Kyrincha Canada, and how I had to morph from Kyrincha Canada as Kyrincha Japan went down the drain into Canadian study tours, and all the correspondence that went with that, and who I was talking to, and who I was calling up for money, and all these things. And I thought, well, there's a whole history there. It's amazing. The number of projects that I started and never finished. I found something else. I hope I haven't mentioned this already. A beautifully put together 60, 70 page Japanese textbook that I made every single page for children learning Japanese, Canadian children or Japanese-Canadian children. The idea being we were going to start this school. This was one of the ideas of Kyrincha Canada. We're going to teach Japanese. We're going to do all this. Well, I never had a partner. And on my own, I just could not bring things. What is it? Bring it home. Get the final bit done. But when I looked at that book and I thought, oh, man, I remember putting it's full of pictures and icons and images and stories. It's beautifully done, written in hiragana, katakana, romanji, you know, using those skills. Today, it would be a useful book. There's nothing dated about it. But we never got hold. Somebody else got a contract for the school at the Japanese Canadian Culture Center, where I thought we might go, but I got all the correspondence associated with that, too. The woman who was in charge then before James Herron, my good friend, took over. Oh, wow. So I'm realizing, all right, I didn't bring them to fruition. Sorry, I'm shouting again. It's just that I get excited. My wife tells me, hey, just you don't have to shout. I apologize. I think I do shout at you. And it must be unpleasant listening. I should learn to slow it down a little, calm down a little. Okay? All right, I'll try. So I realized, even though I didn't bring it to fruition, I'd start a Japanese language program, I must have thoroughly enjoyed all the time I spent making that book. In other words, I filled in the days, the weeks, the months, the years, without successfully creating this huge company. I was successful enough to keep the one tour I have and keep it going, which somehow I have managed to get through. I'm not successful in the sense of maybe providing the kind of security that my wife would have appreciated, you know, in terms of, hey, here's an established company with employees and income coming in from all directions. That never happened. And I find it very interesting to go back and look through the letters to Japan and panic, hey, I got this much in debt. You know, I need your help. And they did bail me out at the beginning. Anyway, I found a piece of paper, three other pieces of paper. So all of this is what I said was a chore and something I dreaded doing is now as I go through it and sort it out and sift through bringing back some of my life, it's not as painful anymore. I'm needing to keep some stuff, but I am filing it in boxes with an X. Can be thrown out. I'm just not going to do it. My number two son said, well, why don't you just throw it out now? Well, no, I'm not ready yet. But I found three sheets of paper labeled needs, haves, wants. And I find this kind of interesting. Needs, haves, wants. What do I have is the first page I would have done. And it was a list of all the skills, the materials, the stuff that I've already got ready. My experience, my certificates, my education. You know, I got here $3.5 million in sales. Now, this is about probably 10 years ago or more. Probably more than that, yeah. But, you know, and one of them, wow, empathy is listed down there. It was just a handwritten list, but one of the few things that I actually saved. A lot of the technology I had in place, an established business, a part work network, you know, ideas, exclamation, imagination, exclamation, creativity, exclamation. I got those things, writing ability, ESL knowledge, experience, and so on, study to experience. So I've got a solid list of haves if I needed to go ahead and make a business. Then I have my wants, which was the last page. Well, I want to travel Canada. I want to make Canadian study tours successful. I want a year-round income. I wanted another a Toronto office at the GCCC. I did have an office in the East York Board for years. I needed Japanese employees in Canada, and I wasn't able to do that. I wanted, monthly salary. And it's quite a long, complicated list. A Tokyo office, two trips to Japan back a year, you know, new programs, partnerships with colleges, all the things that I had made plans for, outlined proposals, and again, never pushed to the finish line. Just stopped short. Made the partnerships, made the connections, and just didn't drive it home. Now, part of me is thinking, that might have been good because I might have ended up in debt and in more trouble than I am now. There may have been some reason other than my own shortcomings and inadequacies. I don't know. But here are the needs. The needs is the list I wanted to share with you. The needs. And again, this is all the process. All this, what's in those boxes? Why have I kept these things for decades? Why were they all shipped back from Japan to Canada, to our new home? So many of them. I mean, I have files from Japan from that time. Old brochures of the company, when my company, Kairinsha Company Limited, was at its peak with overseas branches and many employees, and Ogasawara, the president, was just at his, in his prime with this growing, amazing company before the bottom fell out of the Japanese bubble. Bam! And I'm a victim of that. I was a victim of SARS. I got the SARS letter, the first letter. And after 9/11, the fear of coming terrorism, you know, in the States has got people nervous about traveling. Oh, my God. Historic events impacted me. All right, needs. Learn to complete projects. And I've underlined complete. Learn to complete projects. Number two. Well, I didn't even number them. Learn to make fuller use of time. Learn to be focused. Learn to be disciplined. Learn to sort priorities. Act according to priorities. So those are the needs. And those are still my needs today. Well, except I think I have a better handle of them. I think I actually have, maybe I've actually, I don't know. Do I complete projects? I've abandoned so many, but I think maybe I know when to abandon. Like, for example, Dixon Jane's Azine brought it back. Boom. Gave it a year, brought it to an end. Is that a failure? No, I don't think so. I think just the way it was, I was just going to end up going through an awful lot of pain and expense. And for very, very little gratitude, except for a couple of people who, you know, who know who they are. So maybe the same would have been true of a lot of these businesses. I might have been just up to my neck in it, in extending myself in debt, in time commitments, in in things that, you know, on my own, I don't think I could have handled well. I needed a partner, and I had a partnership. We ended up, we each lost 5,000, maybe 10,000, and it ended. And this is a great partner, and it just ended. That was the office I had. And I know why. We just never communicated. We never got together on ideas. We never talked. And I think that was, we could both recognize that today. God, I guess now I'm probably getting into the boring stage of this, right? Learn to be physically active. Learn to be independent. Learn to be dependent. Delegate, in brackets. Capitalize on experience, knowledge, and vision. And again, I need a part-time Japanese staff to help with my website, my videos. Anyway, I just, you know, this is why I hang on to papers. It's a reflection back on who you are, who you were. I'm going to conclude this. God, I hope it's still recording. I don't even know the time. I'm going to conclude this with one idea I've brought up before here. And it's as if, it's not quite a fog, but it's as if there's something in front of me, a clarity, a truth, an awareness, a knowing that I can't quite see. It's right there, right in front of me. And I'm not talking about a Zen breakthrough of, yes, we are all one and I am at one with the universe and so on. It's not, it's more, it's simpler than that, and it's just about an understanding about life. And I can't quite grab it. I can't quite get it. And there's almost a feeling, I don't know if any of you know it. Because I don't think, and one of the things I was talking about with Fabian last night was a lot of people just don't ask the questions. A lot of people live their lives accepting the status quo. This is who I am. This is what my job is. This is what I wear. This is what I like doing on the weekend. And just carry on and never, ever question their existence, their meaning, their purpose. What about all the what ifs? Like Brian's case, going through those letters. Again, all this ties together, folks. It's all of a piece. Everything in his life turned out very well in an interesting way, aside from the fact that, you know, his wife is, you know, maybe going to marry another woman. All that aside, his children had an incredible upbringing up in the north, Baffin Island and Nunavut, like where they went. She picked him out in Nigeria. She picked him out. Bam. That's the guy for me. She picked out a winner. Brian, you could not, as a woman, you could not imagine in many ways a better catch than Brian. Certainly far better than me or I would ever be. Of good looking, funny, easygoing, flexible, and just a hard worker. Like, he, you know, always holding down two jobs. While he was up there, principal of this, teaching this, on the emergency hotline, doing this, traveling here, taking a group off to Europe, just nonstop. Since I've known Brian from the day I first met. And I told him last night, first thing is, I could so easily hate you if I didn't know you. Through jealousy, through, you know, his life is just so much better. And I don't feel that in reality, but it's just one of those things. You read these letters, oh my God, it's perfect. The kids are doing this, 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 and this. But it was that choice after she picked him out, married him, and then they decided he had a teaching degree. All right, there are jobs up north. That's where we got to go. And off they went. And it just set them up for life, set up their children for life. It's amazing. I've known other people who have done that. And so it makes me think, well, what were my choices? Well, I could have stayed in Japan. Where would I be now? Where would my life be? How would that have been for my boys? You know? I mean, the decision, the timing to come to Canada was great. It was the bottom of the real estate market in Toronto. I had this business set up. I had a job to come back to. We survived. So I'll never know. But it is interesting to reflect on. All right, I think we're running out of steam here. Let me grab hold of the mic. Where are we? Oh, my God, 23 minutes. That was a long one, but all of which is to say, I'm feeling good about it. I'm feeling a little guilty now. I got to get home right away and get back to, I can't leave. I'm probably going to go to Ottawa this weekend. Yeah, here's another thing. All right, it ties in. A lot of it is, what do you do in the present? What do you do? And I can look back at all those pages and say, well, gee, there was some struggling, there was some negotiating, there was some planning, some, you know, even if it didn't turn out. But somehow, I can't think there were any real tragic mistakes in there. Or huge points. Just, oh my God, if only I hadn't have done that. Well, there's probably a few of those. Maybe they're not as big as, oh my God. But maybe they're a little more quiet. Oh my God, I wish I hadn't done that. Okay, yeah, a few of those. Where were we? Finishing off. Damn it. We were on a thread before we got to, oh my God, why did I do that? In the present, living your life. Ah, yeah. So I've been talking about Florida. And it's just not been right. It's not the time for me to drive to Florida yet. I've been trying to do this, put a date on the calendar. All right, this is the day I'm going. And this is the whole tied into the road trek, freedom of the road trek, which I talked about last night with Fabian. And I realized it can't work out. It's got to be spontaneous. It's got to be of the time. And I realize it's not the time for me to go to Florida yet. I think it will be. I think I will. I think I'm heading down to, the Keys, the Florida Keys. I've already made contact with an old friend I've known from early childhood who lives there in Florida to visit him. And the thing is, what's more important right now is to visit my family, to go to Ottawa, to visit my sister, visit my brother, visit my niece, visit my cousin Dave out in Russell. So I've got a 3-day trip to Ottawa planned, probably leaving tomorrow, which is why I got to finish this thing off. And that's more important. And that's what's... That's the message. That's the meaning. Make decisions when it's the time to make the decisions. I was taught that in Japan. You always need more information. Rush. President's words. Go slowly, quickly. Be careful, but act when it's time to act. But don't just jump when you don't have enough information. And so, if you're not sure, wait. It's not the time. And now I realize, before Florida, family get-togethers are more important. I also realize that by going through and looking at all those letters that my mother had, or my father had written to my mother, the diary, all the things in the past, it's all tied together. This is the now. This is all coming together somehow that's going to free me. It's going to take a while. I'm not there yet. Believe me, I'm not there yet. But I'm heading in the direction of finding some freedom. Yes, 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 yes.